party, I have this week two very special guests. My first brother combo. Everybody, welcome to the show, Eli and Aaron Johnson. How we doing, guys?
Great to be here. Thank you so much for having us.
Excited, grateful.
So we'll start where we always start with our first-time guests. However you guys want to handle this one, but basically your origin story. What got you guys into comics, and then at what point did you decide, hey, let's create some of these things?
Okay. You want me to go first, or you want to go? All right. So I'm the older brother. My name's Aaron, and I pretty much was always into it my whole life. I think what was the tipping point was when we were growing up and watching a lot of our favorite cartoons, like the 90s stuff, you know, back Superman, Batman, Animaniacs, you know, all that stuff. And I was just mesmerized by it. And I wanted to do that. One day I wanted my thing to be there so that one day people would watch that on TV the way I was watching what I was watching. And I just trained myself. My brother and I were both self-taught. I mean, we come from a very artistic family on my father's side. So our dad taught us the basics of like painting, because he was actually a painter. He used to do murals and everything. And we didn't stick so much to the painting side of things, but we stuck more to like the cartoony comic side of things. And we just kept going over time. And eventually I got in contact with a few friends, and we found out about a place called DeviantArt. From DeviantArt, we started uploading our art, and companies would come to us, and people would start hiring us for commissions and stuff like that. So it went from being like a dream, you know, to eventually a reality where we were making a living off of our illustration work. And then my first serious job was working for Lucasfilm licensed company. They were called Fantasy Flight Games. So I was making content for their RPG campaigns and for their Order 66 podcast and stuff like that. And then my brother's, some of his first paid contracts were for a lot of indie publishing companies too. And then from that, we just kept going. But we always had the goal of making our own, you know, original comic books. We had created these universes and written long storylines, like hundreds of years into our fictional world of what everything was going to be. But the formula itself was originally created by our dad. So he saw some of the work that we were doing, and he was like, you know, you guys do such good work for everybody else. It's time for you to make your own story. So then he came up with this idea of making these two sibling characters become superheroes. We looked at it, the original concept, and we were like, this is really cool, but I wanted to make it less about us. And then my brother started illustrating or writing more, and all three of us, we would sit down every week and just have these big writing sessions in the middle of everything we were doing. As we were writing the story, I would start creating like a soundtrack, because we all do music as well. So I would hear these sounds and these soundtracks, you know, the big string orchestras and all that. And I would do that while we were writing. And once we got through like maybe a 2-3 years of just writing, we had our screenplay. And now it was time to illustrate it. So the next 2 or 3 years was illustrations of the screenplay. And while we were doing that, we were already pitching it and shopping it around to different TV and film people. We got a contact of a few of them, including some of the guys that worked in Netflix. They loved it, but they were like, yeah, it's too saturated right now. Why don't you try Warner and try some of the other platforms at the time. They were just starting to do the digital streaming things where it is right now, where everybody has their Disney Plus and all that. But this was just starting back then. This was like maybe 2015, 2016. A lot of this stuff wasn't public yet. They were talking about it in these meetings. So they were telling us to go take it there. But what happened was, we just never found a good fit. Like, some of them either didn't understand it at the time, or they just wanted too much creative control. So that's when we started coming up with ways that we could eventually launch our own pilot, self-finance it, and then distribute it the way we want to distribute it. And we eventually came up with an animation production company, and now we're in the process of basically creating more projects and getting financing to eventually be able to start filming with our own cast, our own lighting crew and stuff like that, and just put it out. I mean, you see it with shows like Bel-Air. It started off like a fan, you know, reboot idea concept, and then the actual TV studio saw it, like, yeah, you know, Will saw the thing. Will Smith saw the little fan trailer. He likes it. He wants to go ahead and green light it. Boom, same thing. So we're trying to do stuff like that. Same way, you know, a lot of new projects are coming out on TV now that started off on YouTube. Right? So that's kind of where we're going with it now. So
yeah.
Self-financing, self-publishing, that's the way we're going right now.
I think you answered like 5 questions at once.
No, I know. I know. But, you know, I think he asked the origin, but, you know, that was how it all started with the comics.
Go ahead. Yeah, so you see a lot out there where, like, these big studios are now buying YouTube studios.
Right.
Thinking that's going to solve their problem. It's like,
right.
Yeah, maybe some original ideas would help a little bit more, but it's cool for the creators to get their comeuppance.
Right. Right. That's how we started. We started off just like everybody else, just fans and lovers of the craft. And, you know, we just were like, okay, now it's time to talk business. And that's when our dad got involved and showed us, you know, this is how you do this. This is how you do that. And let's go this way, screenplay, this, that. And here we are, you know.
Anything to add to that, Eli?
Yeah, I think you covered everything. My bad.
Both are artists then. You both have done art on your own in different parts.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've done various projects for a lot of, you know, like Aaron said, we've done some stuff for licensed companies, licensed game stuff, licensed comics.
Tell them about your stuff. Don't be shy. Drop some
things. Well, you know, we've got some things in the works, but, you know, we've got right now, our main thing right now, I guess, is doing, of course, the formula. We're launching the NFTs for that. We'll get to that in a second, probably. And we have Anime Hip Hop. So that's going to be our own production house. We're going to try to get a lot of stuff greenlit with that. You know, everything in between, we've done some work with some tech companies. We've done some work for, you know, a lot of just things that need graphics, images. Because right now, the industry and the way it's working is just everybody's kind of just trying to launch their own thing. Everybody's kind of just trying to make their own product now, which is great. So there's so much diversity in the market. People really need a lot of visuals. So the pandemic, in a sense, was actually kind of a blessing. Because everyone just kind of wanted to make their own thing now because a lot of people weren't going to work. But that kind of drove everyone kind of, okay, we need visuals for our thing that we're launching. So they came to us for a lot of things. So, you know, we got just through that, we were able to tap into a lot more fields outside of just the usual things you would think, like just doing books or just doing games. So now we're doing like tech stuff. We're doing like artwork for, you know, like companies who are doing like sustainable energy and things like that. So, you know, we've got a lot of stuff on the horizon. Some of it we can't announce, but, you know, it's you're going to see a lot of stuff coming up forward.
Cool. So, yeah, definitely, we'll get to the NFT stuff because I would love to have that conversation. But let's start with the formula. Like, what is it? What's the story? And is this going to be a comic series first? Or how do you guys plan on doing this?
You want to answer?
I did the last one, so you can take this one. We'll take
that. Okay. So, yeah, it's already been published as a comic. It's a graphic novel. It's 5 volumes. The story, like I said, we wrote it as a screenplay first, so it would be a 90-minute film. And we broke that 90-minute film up into 5 volumes. Each one has, like, maybe 30 episodes. I mean, 30 pages. And then the next one will have, like, you know, 50 pages. Overall, it was, like, I think it was, like, 240-something pages all combined. And the first episode of the set was already released by Friesen Press. And Friesen Press was like the largest independent publisher in Canada. their biggest runs was the Canadian version of Harry Potter, the Canadian version of Spawn, and a few other, you know, projects that were, you know, little stuff. So we figured, like, you know, that would be a good place to start. And they had the best deal on the table at the time because we had shopped it to so many different places that all liked it, but they didn't have enough that they could offer us that we couldn't do ourselves. So it starts off as a book. From the book, you can read the story. And the story is basically, I like to kind of summarize it as this way. These two siblings became the superheroes that they wish they had. So you'll see them start off as their family is a well-off family. They start off in the suburbs. Their father is a firefighter and a Gulf War veteran. And he's been doing that for maybe a good decade or so. Everybody knows their family loves them. And then one day there's a mysterious incident that happens during a fire that he's called to. He dies in the process of saving people from that fire. But what happens is the family gets relocated to a fictional city we call Bayview. You'll see them 10 years later. Now they're teenagers, those same boys. And you see them just navigating through life, you know. Then one day, their mother, who also moved and started a successful business, she has her own, like, nightclub-y type restaurant. It's big. It's popular. It's a big staple in the community. One day, that place gets attacked. Now, the thing that's so strange about the attack is that it looks like the two attackers have some kind of superpowers. Then you start to see a trail of different random attacks all by these strange people that all seemingly have superpowers. Now, the LAPD, within the LAPD, they have a family friend who was a cop at the time, one of their late father's best friends, who's now a detective, homicide detective. So he's watching this whole story closely as possible. But it kind of, he's almost taking too much focus on that versus all the other stuff going on. But what he's noticing is the trends, how they connect the dots. Like, it's not all separate random things. He's seeing, like, there's a bigger picture. But now he has to convince the whole, you know, force that, and also try to get them all to prevent the next attack before it's too late. Meanwhile, the siblings are trying to figure out where they go from this point. And they're not happy with how things are moving, you know, as far as, like, getting to the bottom of the attack and what they're going to do. So, and also their city. And so that's when they're not claiming to be superheroes, but they just want to do something. And that's when they get this idea of hiding their identity and trying to find who is responsible for it. And that leads them on their journey of vigilantism, you know. And with the help of their friend who doesn't know what their real identity is, you know, he ends up solving, or possibly, we don't know, he might have a chance of solving this case. So we see throughout the next four volumes of the book what happens, how everything ties in together. But that's as much as I could say, I guess, without giving too much away.
And the two of you do the art on the comic as well?
Yep. The whole first episode, Elijah did in the interiors, and then I did the cover. And then we have some great colorists and letterers who also did a lot of stuff from, like, X-Men and stuff like that. They came back to do this. Tobin Racicott, Ross Hughes, I think he works from Hi-Fi.
Yes, yep. He worked for Hi-Fi. He's done some work for DC Comics on Wonder Woman and Superman. Back when they had that book, he's done Teen Titans, Justice League. We have Alonzo Espinosa. He's also kind of making his way through the industry right now. He's doing some Marvel books as well, I believe. And, you know, these were guys I've known for, like, a few years. So when we finally got the chance to make a book, I was like, okay, I can finally finally work with these guys, because I've been fans of their work all just independently, so... Never actually got a chance to just bring all of these guys who I consider them my friends, and now we have them all in a book together. So that even made the production process a lot simpler and a lot more fun, just because everybody kind of already had a trust and everybody kind of knew each other's style, because we're all kind of fans of each other's work. Right. So once we got down to that, Tobin's probably the guy I've been working with the longest out of everybody on the staff, because I started working with him back in like 2016 or 17. So we already kind of had a shorthand for how we did everything. So that one was just a lot of fun to make to put everything together.
And you said the start off as a script. Has there been anyone interested in kind of doing something with it now that the comic's out and they can kind of see it a little bit better? Or are you still kind of fighting that battle?
Yeah, no, it's definitely got the interest. Like I said, there's the director. We had a director out there at Netflix. He wanted it. He loved it. But at the time, it was too much other content that they had to sort through. So they were like, you'd have an even better shot of getting this out faster if you go to like Warner. We take it to Warner. They love it, but we don't know about that deal. So then we keep going in different places. But in the meantime, we also have our production company, like Elijah was saying, Anime Hip Hop. And we're just like, we're going to go ahead and just push it ourselves and then put this, put like our first episode, like a pilot together. We actually had help from another, he's a publicist, but he had, at the time, he had just helped to get another cartoon greenlit. This was a cartoon that was being created by Janelle Monáe. But that one happened. That one went through, and he saw what we did. He's like, yeah, I'm going to help you. So he started helping us with the sizzle reel, and we've been just with him for like a good year or two. So it's been definitely a lot of little movements that we've been making. People love it. That's the one thing. We also, even out here in the East Coast, I was able to get it, some of the books put into Kevin Smith's comic shop, the Jay and Silent Bob shop. Yeah, I got a few of the copies over there, and then we got a few of the copies in some other shops in Burbank, back in LA, and we're just going to keep placing them in different spots, but the interest is there. When we went to Comic-Con last December, that was the first big, I think that was the first Comic-Con, LA Comic-Con since the pandemic, right?
I think so. I think they passed on San Diego for that year, but they decided to do the LA one, which was a little bit later. I'm not sure, but that was the first one that we'd ever been to.
And no, they did the San Diego one last year too. They did. I think those were the first time they did those two since the pandemic.
Right.
Yeah. I think it was just a smaller one. It was on a different date, but it was called San Diego.
Yeah.
No, they had a lot of virtual booths. That's when they started doing that, I think.
They kept saying the turnout. They kept expecting it to be small. But look, the first day of LA Comic Con was like 60,000. I think the second day was like 120,000. So it wasn't
a lot of people.
It wasn't that small.
I think they underestimated the turnout.
I think in like 4 or 5 years ago, they were used to seeing a million people. But for like half a million almost to come out, that's still really big, especially in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
So, we sold out of all of our books that we sold there. So it's like the interest is there. The people are there. And then that led us to the next step, which was the NFTs. But,
So, okay, I'll set up the NFT talk then, because this is a conversation online that confuses me. Not because I understand what NFTs are. That's not what confuses me. What confuses me is there's like a hatred of NFTs.
Yeah.
And I always see NFTs as kind of a neutral thing, and it's what you do with it that can be good or bad.
Right.
And I see a lot of indie creators like yourself who do interesting things, or at least find ways to get funding for their projects through NFTs.
Right.
It's a little weird when I'm a big Kevin Smith fan, so I'll pick on Kevin Smith a little bit. But when he gives the golden movies head as an NFT, I'm like, it seems like a bit of a cash grab. But so what I'll ask you here is, you're doing NFTs. What's your defense of NFTs? And then B, what are you doing with it?
Can I answer this one? So, my defense of NFTs as a concept, I guess, is the really thing, is it's just another marketing tool. It's merchandise, because at the end of the day, you have a property, you can turn it into a movie, you could turn that property into a video game, you could turn that property into action figures. You know, like, I have the Star Wars toys behind me. Star Wars is a property. They're just looking for more ways to make money off of that property. So what happens is, a lot of times companies will do it themselves. They can turn their own thing into properties and then, like, turn it into merchandise. I think where a lot of the negative reaction comes from is just that a lot of times, especially when things are new like this, people will kind of take things to extremes. So a lot of the time you'll see, you'll hear complaints of people stealing images and then selling them as NFTs when they didn't actually create them. You know, those are things that do happen. Obviously, these are things you want to prevent. And a lot of the time, you know, you'll see people saying that, you know, it's a bit of a bubble, like, where people are charging insane amounts of money for something. And it's like, you know, the quality isn't quite there. Again, this is all in how you use it. I feel like, you know, as a platform, NFTs have so much potential because right now it's still too new. Even the people with the most amount of knowledge that I know of it, they're still figuring out ways to do this actually and to make it practical. So there's the application where you can take an NFT and then add it to the metaverse, which is this thing where it's like virtual reality and stuff. So we're working with guys who are trying to do stuff like that. So we're looking to take the NFTs for the formula into other aspects. It's not something that you can just own. It's something that you can actually have utility with. So those are like ways that you can actually make NFTs practical. But just on a day-to-day basis, I actually wouldn't advise everyone to make an NFT, because NFTs, I feel like, you know, you need to have like a purpose behind it, or otherwise it does become a bit of a cash grab, and it makes the brand of an NFT look a bit dishonest. But I think there's a lot of inherent good within that. So I think it's just about how you use it. So,
yeah, 100%. That's my feelings of it. Like, you can, it's a tool, and a tool can be used for good or can be used for bad.
Yeah, and absolutely.
What was the second question?
No, the second question I think was with what we were doing with our versions.
What you're doing? Are you just making photos and selling them, or you kind of answered it, but, you know, in more detail, what are you doing with them?
So what we wanted to do was use the NFTs not just as another type of merch, which it is, but also to be able to give buyers and holders of the merch ability to have creative control over the film, which we're working towards. And this is something that, going indie with our publishing strategy, allows us that going to a major place wouldn't allow us to do, right? You wouldn't be able to go like, hey, I'm crowdfunding this film that's going to be released by Paramount. And then once it's on Paramount, you guys get to say what happens in the movie, right? Mm-hmm. But we're doing that here. And we're using the people who do buy the NFTs as the people that have control over the film. So the story, of course, is written out, but we want people to control what they want to see in the film. You know, it doesn't have to go exactly the same way the book story goes. It doesn't have to go exactly the same way the, you know, because it's coming out on different platforms. So that's what something that we thought of doing. And it's crazy that we thought of these different things when we came up with the story 7-8 years ago. But the technology, like NFTs, metaverse, and all that stuff, didn't exist eight years ago. It's only now that we have the ability to give people this kind of freedom. And I remember back when we were doing crowdfundings, my brother, he's raised like 60,000-70,000 on crowdfunding for different companies. I've raised probably about half that as well. And what happened was, the crowdfunding method, like the Kickstarter days and stuff like that, are still useful, but they're slowly getting phased out. It's getting harder and harder to do, just with algorithms and everything. Like, the way these companies make it harder to see posts and stuff like that, they're trying to phase it out. And that's where I feel like the NFT platform or concept gives power back to the creators, where it's like, I could legitimately, organically grow this huge fan base and tell them all, like 100,000 people, buy this one thing. And nobody can stop me or make the post hidden, or, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Force me to buy a certain amount of likes or whatever, so people, you know what I mean? it's not like that. And I feel like that's the one thing that makes the NFT space still honest when it comes to your ability to really reach people directly versus like the big machine of Facebook or Meta now that they're calling themselves, you know what I mean? So these Discord chat rooms and stuff, that's where it all goes down. And I like that. And I'm trying to get more active on it. We're all trying to get more active to really get back to the basics. And that's what we were doing when we were like kids. We were in chat rooms every day, right? But once we got too old, it was like, oh, that's weird. That's for, you know. But now it's like the world is saying, go back to the chat room. Talk to the kids again, you know. Play with the kids. Stream your game. Make them care. Make them feel like you're a part of what they care about. You know what I mean? And I feel like that is the most effective marketing tool to actually care and be engaged in the same spaces that they're in. You know what I mean? So that's what we're planning on doing with our NFTs.
It's funny you say that because that just makes me think of AOL Instant Messenger coming home after AOL, school and be like, hey,
hey, the guys. Yahoo, AOL. Yahoo Messenger. Come on now. Remember Yahooligans?
Yes. Yahooligans. And then they had the other one, GeoCities. You can make your own website.
Yeah, man. All those AOL chat rooms, man. All of that. That good stuff.
So long ago.
GeoCities.
This is like the new generation's version of that. These Discords and this Clubhouse and all of this other little stuff, or TikToks and all of that. I'm just starting to get around to it too, and I feel like I'm old now because even though I use social media every day, of course, my mindset is like I'm thinking about like I'm about to get this target, I'm about to make this money, and they're just thinking about it like they just want to have fun. Look at my dance, you know what I mean? I got this little icon. Mine has rainbows. Yours has glitter on it. You know what I mean? They just want to have fun with the thing. And we're trying to think about how to make money. And I think it's cool that this is forcing us to come back to figuring out why it's fun, why we did it in the first place. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Yeah.
So you guys got all that fun stuff going on. Is there anything else comic-wise or film-wise that you're working on as well?
Yeah. You can talk about it.
That you can talk about. I know you said there's stuff.
That we can. Yeah, I know. That
we can. We're really trying to push for the actual second episode of The Formula to come out this year. Because we have the artwork done. Like Aaron was giving a little bit of the backstory on how it took us a couple of years to do the artwork. Because we ended up with something like 234 pages, I believe. So that's, you know, the first 30 pages are already out, and that's episode one. We're looking for 5 volumes to be released ultimately. So each volume is probably going to get a little bit longer, which is, I would like to think that it's a little bit exciting for the fans so they can get a little more bang for their buck. But we're trying to get volume 2 out, which is one I'm really excited about. Me and Aaron worked really closely on the artwork for that one. So, you know, we're going to have probably Alonzo back, going to have Ross back, going to have Tobin back. And the story really picks up in episode 2. So I'm really excited to just get that out. We did a preview of the second episode for Comic-Con back in December. So if you went on to theformulacomic.com, you could actually get a preview. And we still have it up there. You can actually check out a preview of the second episode. It's in black and white so far. No dialogue. We don't want to give too much away. But you guys can read it out there and just kind of like look at the pages, kind of see what's going on, and maybe give some fan theories on what happens. So that's one thing we're really excited on launching this year.
And that preview is free. We made it like a Comic-Con exclusive sneak peek just to get people excited. I feel like we might just mess around and put the first episode out for free as a download during certain periods, or certain other episodes we might just put out for free in certain periods. And that's something I just want people to stay in tune with our site, to make sure that they're always up to date when they get these options. But another thing with the NFT too is that we are putting these things together as bundles. So say if somebody does want to buy one of those NFTs, if they get just like one of these animations or something like that, they will also get the book as a download. So it's not like they have to keep buying and buying and buying things. We want them to get as much as they possibly can, even if they're not all the way interested in one item, they're going to want another one so they can get all of them, just as a way to thank them just for being involved. We really appreciate it. So,
like we said, it's about the utility with NFTs too. You don't just want to keep pushing, you know, an item on somebody. You kind of want them to have a little bit more use of it. It's not something that just sits there and looks nice. You know, you kind of want them to be like, this is a product that I want because I can keep using it. You know, those are like the things that you like to purchase in daily life. It's not, you don't want something that's just like one and done. You want it to be like, I can use this every day and I can read this and I can go through this. And yeah, so we're looking at NFTs from that perspective, where people can just really get another way of interacting with the book. And it's not just something like, it's not a cash grab. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We want each experience to be unique. If they want to just be in that NFT world, they'll have stuff that they enjoy. If they have the book, they can get that. If they want the film, either way they want to support it is going to go towards that, making that film a reality. And of course, they'll have a say over how the film plays out if they do support it. You know what I mean? So we're excited about it.
So it sounds like on your website, people can interact with the NFT market. They can get the book digitally. Can they also get physical versions of the book?
Yes. That's the one thing that we've been really excited about. And especially at the height of the pandemic, a lot of people were ordering those books. They're like, I want one signed. I want this for my son, blah, blah, blah. So that was something that we were really riding off that for a minute. And we're going to keep going with that. But that was something
that nothing to do but stay indoors and read.
No, it was the turnout that really surprised us. Some people wanted those physicals. You know, I think we take it for granted. Like, even with the local comic book shop, we just take it for granted that it's there as a platform. You know, we're so used to having that button to download everything. But it's like certain people just love the feeling of the book. And after doing the deal with Friesen and having the book in our hands with, like, that's our art, you know, and this binder and everything else, you can't really replace that feeling with anything or that experience. So I get it. And so I always get excited when I see people ask for that book. And when we went to Comic-Con and then Anime Pasadena, we went to that the next week. It was just something magical about being able to walk up to people in a costume and they're like, I want the book, you know. And it's different from being able to just sell them a link. Go to the scan this code. We had it. We had the codes to scan and all that. But when they have the physical book, you know, it's different. It's just different.
The excitement is different even. Like, they feel like they're really, you know, part of it. It's like a collector's item almost. It's really funny.
Yeah. So... yeah, that's like what he said. That's the next focus. Is putting we are working on the film, but at the same time, we want to keep pushing out the next episode, the next episode, the next episode. So on the books, so that's what we're also focused on next.
Cool. And so I guess just to wrap it up, pimp that website out one more time for me, and then do you guys have social media that I can send everybody to as well?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you're going to hit up theformulacomic.com and you can find everything from the first episode, a preview of the second episode for free. You can interact with our OpenSea or Nifty NFT markets. We already have a couple of items on there and we're going to keep blowing it up as the week goes on because we're really dropping like a lot of content this week and the weeks going forward. So you can check out the NFT stuff there. You can find me on most sites as at Art by Atlas and on Facebook, Art by Atlas Zero, because somebody took Art by Atlas by itself. And you can find Aaron as well. He has a couple of handles, so maybe you can go through those.
I'm just AJ the 90s kid on everything. Like anything I related, AJ the 90s kid. AJTHE90SKID. You know. But the Formula Comic itself is the Formula Comic on everything. Facebook is the Formula Comic. Twitter is the Formula Comic, everything. So,
and we interact with everyone too all the time. So if you guys want to, you know, leave comments, talk about us, ask questions, you know, we're always pretty much on there. We're getting the updates live and we can just talk to people. And we love, you know, interacting with everybody because, you know, we've gotten, of course, a lot of great reviews just from like companies and regular people who are just like reading the book. And it's fun to just interact with people because you always want to know who you're making this stuff for. And it's kind of fun to see how everyone thinks of the work as a creator yourself. You know, you're kind of like, will people like it? And if they do, like, so fun.
you know, just talk about it, you know, how the project strikes everyone differently. So we just love interacting with everyone. So definitely give us a follow on any of those, you know, on any of those sites, and we'll always get back to you.
Awesome. And to everybody out there, I will have a link down below to theformula.com. So you can just check the show notes for that and click there. Check out the book and all the other fun stuff these guys are doing. Eli, Aaron, thank you so much for coming on. It was a great conversation. Hopefully we can do it again sometime when you guys are a little bit further along in some of these projects, and you could talk a little bit more about them.
Can, like, you know, reference this interview and like be like, remember when we couldn't talk about these? Now we can talk about it. How much time do you have?
Yeah. I'm excited, man. I want everybody to follow The Fortress as well, because there's a lot of great stuff I already saw on here, and there's more I know you guys got in the works. So follow The Fortress. They're doing a lot of big things, and we can't wait to keep rocking with them. And we just love this movement. It's only February, and everybody's on that same momentum of like, this has to be our biggest year. Everybody I'm working with from this interview, everybody's got that same goal in mind. So it will be our biggest year.
That's what I say every year. Last year's numbers are nothing. We got to double them.
Double. We're not closing. We're losing. Those are rookie numbers. Get your numbers up.
Get those numbers up.